Where would the Appalachian Mountains be without the granny women, the healers and the seers, the women, and sometimes men, who held these small mountain communities together with their herbal knowledge, midwifery, predictions, and magic? Today, we speak with Dr. Rhonda Caudill, a psychic medium, author, Reiki instructor, historian, and haunted bed and breakfast owner, who shares a glimpse into Appalachian culture, along with her own sightings of ghosts. Today, on Homespun Haints. Hello, hainted loves. Welcome to Homespun Haints. I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we are continuing our burrowing into the Appalachians.
Paranormal Appalachia.
We just spoke last week with Anne Jeffellers Mason of the McKinney Center in Jonesboro, and she referred us to this lovely lady with SRS Paranormal that we're going to talk to today, Rhonda Caudill, PhD. Yes, she is a doctor, and she also is a medium. She accompanies SRS Paranormal on all of their investigations and provides the feels to the investigation. She's also the owner of the Nickerson Sneed House, which is an incredibly haunted place and will be soon opening as a bed and breakfast. And she has been featured in the Season of the Witch documentary, which is available on Amazon Prime, Tubi, Roku, and Walmart.com. Just had such a great time talking to her today. And she's located in Western Virginia.
Glade Spring, Virginia.
Again, very close to where I grew up. That whole area, it's all interconnected. You get on one winding road and you never know where you might find yourself in Virginia, North Carolina, Kentucky, or Tennessee.
Somebody's neck, somebody's gap.
Yeah. We used to drive through Sam's Gap all the time, actually.
There you go. I knew it.
So we're thrilled to have Rhonda on. She's just an amazing person. We had so much fun talking to her. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this interview. And we want to give you a shout out to everybody who joined us for the after party after our first episode on Facebook Live. That was a lot of fun. I pulled out my fiddle.
It was awesome. Becky fiddled so many things. I think she composed at least 4 new scores.
I don't know. I was just making shit up.
Well, if you hear a new soundtrack for season 6, you will know where the inspiration has stemmed from.
It came from our life.
Especially if you hear banjos featured in the new music for season 6.
Maybe? I got a banjo. I'm just looking for an instructor. So if any of y'all out there in the Atlanta area teach banjo, please let me know, because this is really hard. I really thought for sure I was close enough to the mountains I'd be able to find a banjo instructor, but no.
Really?
Yeah, like the closest one is about an hour away up in the North Georgia mountains. It is really an Appalachian instrument, apparently. Well, if you want to learn like traditional bluegrass banjo, which I do, and I want to learn it the old-fashioned way, like through an instructor who passes on his knowledge, I just need to listen and play. Listen and regurgitate and make up on my own. That's the way I want to do it. I will find somebody, though. Maybe I'll have a seance and conjure the ghost of Earl Scruggs and let him teach me.
Well, I still haven't managed to find myself a concertina or a concertina teacher or any time with which to do either of those things, but it still might happen in the distant future when I'm sitting on a porch somewhere drinking sweet tea in my old age.
And playing concertina.
Playing the concertina, yes.
One day, all of us are just going to be in one big haunted house in Savannah or something somewhere.
Ooh.
Just take care of each other, clean up each other's shit when we shit on the deck, because we're going to be old and sometimes forget our diapers.
Shit on the deck. Oh, man.
I wanted to mention last night on Facebook Live, I thought this was kind of funny, because Diana, you are so good at faking it.
I'm a performer from birth.
The whole time, she's got this smile on her face, and she's happy, and she's joking along, and she's engaged, and everything seems to be going great. And we get off the call, and I called her afterward, because we always call each other and be like, hey, how do you think it went? And she said, could you tell that I spilt an entire glass of ice water in my lap in the middle of that?
On my recliner. So I got to sit in a gooshy puddle of wet, mushy polyurethane foam for half an hour.
Oh, the goosh.
That was distracting.
You did a great job. I had no idea.
Well, you know, it's like they say in Moulin Rouge, the show must go on. Whether I'm dying of tuberculosis or soaking in a puddle of squishy polyurethane foam, the show must go on.
It sure must. Other than spilling water in your lap, have you had any other mishaps, water or otherwise related, that you need to share with us today?
There's actually a global mishap happening right now, which I found quite intriguing.
Oh.
So, Becky, you're familiar with ChatGPT, yes?
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about its value, controversy, or anything like that.
Nope.
We're just going to talk about linguistic etymology. So hear me out. So, obviously, when you say a foreign word as you're speaking English, a formal noun, I should say. When you say a formal noun in another language, you don't translate that formal noun. You just say it as it's said in that language.
Yeah.
I'm going to Chengdu Chinese restaurant. You know,
right.
It's the way of the world. So when French people talk about ChatGPT, they call it ChatGPT, except the letters GPT in French are G-P-T.
Oh, no.
And you know what the word chat means in French?
Chat, yeah, cat.
And you know what the word je means in French?
No, I don't.
Me, I.
Okay.
Je, like je t'aime.
Oh,
je
yeah. Got it.
Je ne parle pas français.
No.
Well, pété just happens to mean farted.
Oh, no.
So every time a newscaster references ChatGPT in a French newscast, it sounds in French to all the French listeners like, this new advancement in AI called Cat, I Farted is very much interrupting the tech scene. Is that not wild? Would that not enhance the controversy if it was such a thing in English? I mean, of all the wonderful things for middle schoolers to get a kick out of after school watching the news.
I love it. I kind of want to start referring to it as Cat, I Farted.
I have already.
Oh, yeah.
We're already having conversations with Cat, I Farted in my house.
Ha, huh, got it. I think that should be a new trend.
Mm-hmm.
Chat,
mm-hmm.
Je pète. I can't even speak French.
That's close enough.
But so this is my sophomoric humor when I was in Germany.
Oh.
And I always got a kick out of this too.
Wait, this is above and beyond the cod pieces.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is just is. The word to drive in German is.
Oh, wait. Fahren.
Fahren,
right?
Yes. Fahren. But the H is silent, so it's fahren. And when you conjugate it, you're going to say, he drives, it's fart.
Ah.
All of the exits on the Autobahn say, go out, which is ausfahrt. So when we got picked up at the airport, I went up to the driver and asked if he could take us to Gelnhausen, that little town where we saw the cod pieces, as referenced in our last episode. It's Germany. So even though he's driving a Mercedes, because it's Germany and it's a Mercedes, not all our luggage will fit in the trunk. So I have to sit in the front seat with an expanded carry-on wedged between the dashboard and my knees.
Ouch.
And we're driving 100 miles per hour, whatever, down the road. And I am literally like rolling down the window and taking pictures of Ausfahrt, Ausfahrt, Ausfahrt every time we passed one, because that's the mature woman I am.
Ausfahrt. So that just means exit ramp? Exit.
Yeah, just means exit this way. Drive out this way.
Drive out.
Yes. Ausfahrt. Apparently, farting just happens in all languages. So I'll send you a photo of Ausfahrt. I only got one good photo because it was not very easy. And I'm sure the driver is kind of like, what is she doing
on earth?
Because these were not places to take photos. I mean, we're going very fast. And it was, I kind of had to do it with one hand, you know, because the suitcase is up to my chin. And
eek.
I'm like worried I'm going to lose the phone.
Right. You're going to decapitate yourself if you hit somebody and going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
How many kilometers an hour is that?
160. We were going 160 kilometers per hour.
Dang. It sounds much scarier in kilometers.
Now, of course, at the time, I didn't know what the kmh to mph conversion was. So I'm just looking over at his dash and I'm seeing that needle climb and it's like 140, 150, 160. And I'm like, I don't even know how fast this is, but it feels really fast. And the driver's like,
yeah,
no speed limit. And I'm like, yee! Anyway, on that note, we hope you enjoy this interview with Rhonda.
Yee!
we're going to talk about the mountains.
Granny women who are absolutely, definitely, and positively not witches.
And, and some good old-fashioned Appalachian ghost stories.
Can't wait.
You're going to love this. These stories are good.
Yeah.
Before we get into talking to her, though, we do have our book club that's today this is airing. It is happening.
Today. Get ready.
March.
Read real fast.
Yes.
You can listen to the audiobook in like 15 hours.
There you go. Yeah. So
you have time.
You got some time. Yeah. Or even if you haven't read the whole thing, come check it out. We're reading How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix. It's a fabulous book. And we're meeting on our Patreon. You do not have to be a paying member of our Patreon to join the book club, but
that's
you
right.
do need to come check out the Patreon. It's at patreon.com/homespunhaints. And if you are interested in getting bonus content and content without any commercials, you can become a paying member of our Patreon at patreon.com/homespunhaints. It is the place where all the ghosts go to live. Or something. Anyway, it's full of joy.
It's full of joyful living ghosts.
There you go. Thanks.
Nice. Oh, and guess what? If you're a patron, you wouldn't have to hear this commercial.
Today on the show, we are so thrilled to bring on Rhonda Caudill. She is joining us from Virginia, from the Appalachian Mountains, Glade Spring, Virginia. She is a paranormal investigator. She has appeared on Season of the Witch, and she is also a medium. We're very excited to have her on the show today. She is an all-around spooky lady, just the type of person we love talking to. Rhonda, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to speak with you gals today.
So tell us about Season of the Witch.
It is a documentary that was filmed here in the southwest rural part of Virginia, in my neck of the woods, by a local director. It follows the history of witchcraft and where it originated, the changes that's come about, how women were subjected to terrible torture to get confessions, and it follows on down to how it's perceived today in modern day society and how it's changed so much and completely done a turnaround.
Yeah.
And it was a very exciting documentary. It was a lot of hours of filming with Jerry Sword and Terrell Lee, the director and producer. I know it was a lot more hours for them than editing because there was so many filming hours.
Yes, the editors are sometimes the unseen heroes
Yes. Of
these things. That's exciting. And that's available on Amazon and some other streaming services as well, right?
You can purchase it on Amazon and Walmart.com, or you can watch it. It streams on Roku channel and Tubi and Halloween channel. It's on Roku.
It's everywhere.
If you want to see it, you can see it.
All right. Excellent.
Becky, how did we not know there's a Halloween channel?
I know. I didn't know that.
We're behind the times.
We need to add that, I guess.
Right.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait to check that out. That sounds really exciting, especially since you said it's a local producer in Southwest Virginia that created it. Can you share a little bit about witchcraft in rural Virginia? I know that there's this, I guess, a strange way that people in this area regarded witchcraft, especially back in the 1800s, because there was so much magic that people had to sort of take advantage of just to survive. It was a really rough area. And these women were healers, and they were the ones that kind of held the community together. But then outside of that area, you have this very persecuted viewpoint toward witchcraft. So can you give us a little bit of context of how witchcraft has been viewed in the area, just from your own perspective over the years?
Yes, I was raised in a very religious family. Uncles were ministers. My mother was a minister. At 15, I was like, this is just not my path. My path is different. And that's when I discovered, started reading up on different religions. And I'm like, there's nothing that really grabs me, that really resonates with me. I've always been drawn to witchcraft, so I started studying it. My father's mother was actually a table tipper. That was a big thing back in the 20s. And her aunt was a healer. Now, their family's very religious, we can't say she was a witch because most of the family gets offended, but that's basically what she was. She was a healer, a granny woman. And they used a lot of root magic, meaning herbs and stuff. They used cornhusk dolls or poppet dolls to represent, it's sympathy magic is what it is. But they were, if they called themselves a witch, then they were done for. They tarred and feathered. If they called themselves a healer or a granny woman, oh, the same people that would tar and feather them would come out of the woodworks, oh, I need your help. So they had to be very careful what they called themselves or what they did in public for people. But it was very much a part of almost every family had someone in their family who did this, or they knew someone in the community. It was not uncommon. And it was a very poor area. It's still, I don't want to say really poor, but it is. We were economically depressed. We always have been in this area. It was good when there was factories and coal mines, but a lot of that's closed down and left. So we rely on, you know, retail and restaurants. I remember with my grandma, I lived with her several years when I was a child. And that's not uncommon either. You have extended families. You've got grandchildren being raised by grandparents because the mother and father have several children. They just can't make it or circumstances, but it's not uncommon. But when I lived with my grandmother, my granddad would hunt. We raised a garden. Nothing went to waste. So with these granny women, they used everything they had. They wasted nothing. And back in the 1800s, doctors were scarce too. If you didn't have a granny woman and you were waiting on a physician, you probably weren't going to make it if it was something really serious.
That resonates so much with everything that I learned growing up in that area as well. How about today? Are there still healers and granny women in the area today that people rely on, or has modern medicine kind of shifted that?
I think modern medicine has kind of shifted that. There are still people who practice. I'm practicing, but it's more for their immediate families. People don't seek them out like they used to.
Right, right.
One of the things you said is something I'm totally unfamiliar with, so I'd love a little bit more detail. You said that poppets were used for practicing sympathy magic. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what that means.
Sympathy magic is a representation of a person. So whatever you do to this doll is what happens to the person. It's like a conduit type thing.
Okay.
When Diana was in town a couple years ago, I think I made you make a cornhusk doll with me or something, right? Where I tried to show you how to do it.
You sure tried.
It's been a very long time for me. I learned how to do it as a child, but my skills have since deteriorated. But we tried. So let's shift a little bit into ghosts. I know that you're a psychic medium. You have the gift, if you're okay sharing it. Tell us a little bit about some of your earliest experiences with that, like how you realized that this was happening.
Actually, that sent cold chills all over me because my first experience always kind of freaks me out to think about. I was probably 4 or 5, and I had been watching I Love Lucy, and I thought, okay, I'm Lucy, and I'm in the mirror in a bedroom in my grandmom's house. I'm just dancing, you know, doing her little thing, and there's somebody behind me in the mirror. And I turned around like, there's nobody there. And it was nobody I recognized. And so I ran out. I didn't tell anyone for years. I've just now started telling this story. But I wouldn't go back into that bedroom for like 3 years. And then after that, it was only with someone else. But that was my very first experience.
Why do you think you felt like you couldn't tell anybody else, or reasoning behind not telling
me? I don't know why. It just scared me so bad. I think I just didn't want to think about it or talk about it. Because my family was always really open. My grandmother told me stories, you know, ghost stories of when she was a little girl and when she was first married, and they lived in this old church with a graveyard in the back and all the things that happened there. And so we grew up hearing all these stories. So it was normal, but they, you know, they'd say, don't tell this stuff at school. People's going to think you're crazy. So,
right. Even though your family was very religious, they still talked openly about ghosts, but they told you not to talk about it.
But I could talk about it to them, but, you know, not at school because people think I was crazy. I think it was more they would think they were crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about reputation.
Yeah. I think it was just, it really scared me, and I just didn't want to think about it.
sometimes when you're a kid, if you don't talk about it, it feels like you can just ignore it, but it actually just kind of builds on your subconscious over the years. Yeah.
So did you only see the woman in the mirror, or when you turned around, you saw her?
Oh, I couldn't tell you if it was, I think it was a man. I just got a glimpse, but yeah, no, it was just in the mirror. And then I just bolted. I was gone. That was it.
Ooh, mirrors. Mirrors freak me out. Mirrors, clowns, and small spaces.
Yeah. I
can handle anything else.
I hate clowns. But now the funny thing is I mirror scry now to get images and stuff. So my sister hates mirrors. So I don't know if maybe she hasn't said she's ever seen anything, but she cannot stand a mirror.
Are you tired of websites that have been Frankenstein together?
Oh, my website is so slow and creaky.
Every time I use the search bar, it just returns Abby Normal over and over again.
Becky's sister company, The Concept Spot, holds the secret to life itself and can create new life from nothing. In fact, we've been giving life to highly functional websites for the last 25 years using premium parts we swear we didn't salvage from graveyards.
Ooh, check out that head. Image.
Instead of going,
my new website purrs.
Need a blog? The Concept Spot can do that. Want an online store? We can do that too.
We build our sites from the cellular level. No reused templates or discarded body parts here, so we can make your site do whatever you want and look however you want.
It's gorgeous! I can't even see the stitches.
We can also resurrect your dead website if rigor mortis has set in.
Oh, it's like a new man.
If you think Homespun Haints is frighteningly genius, you should see our websites. Let your favorite ghoulish gals, Becky and Diana, build you a monstrous website that will wreak havoc on the internet for years to come.
Visit theconceptspot.com for more information.
It's live! It's live!
Maybe she saw the same thing but blocked it out.
Maybe.
So when did you start putting together what this could have been? When did you start realizing, oh my God, that could have been a ghost?
Oh, I knew right then and there what it was.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. You knew what it was, just not who it was. Okay.
So obviously you overcame this fear. How did that journey happen? I assume that you started seeing some things after that that did not terrify you as much.
Honestly, I guess I kind of got used to it. I just knew it was going to be there because when I was a teenager, it really increased about 14 or 15. And then I was at the point I was like, I've got to figure out what this is and why it is and try to get it to just not bother me so much, you know, just at least let me sleep one night without waking me up. So that's when I started and it was all about the same time I started studying witchcraft, and everything just kind of happened at the same time. I kind of evolved in everything together. So then that's when I started, you know, I need a way to contact. So spirit boards, pendulums and stuff like that. But then I realized early 20s that I didn't need the tools, that I could connect without the tools, but the Ouija board was my gateway. My gateway tool.
Oh, it always is.
Yeah.
You mentioned that they were keeping you up at night or waking you up. What was going on? What was that experience like?
Well, and it still happens now. I would just feel like somebody's watching me and then wake up and there's no one there. But then you hear something in the room. Night terrors almost every night, or sleep paralysis, whatever you want to call it. Old hag syndrome. So you wake up and you can't move, but you can see, and things look distorted in the room, which I think is, you know, they say that that's your mind, you know, trying to adjust, the eyes and your mind's trying to adjust from dream state to reality. But what I saw did not look like my mind was trying to adjust. I knew what I saw. So there was things there.
What sort of things would you see?
Usually it was like a shadow, a black shadow. And I've seen that in the past several years. So that's never left.
Wow. Okay. So your whole life, you've experienced this. You've seen it. Is it just one shadow or do you see multiples?
It's usually just one shadow. But I see things happening. Like, so one instance, my husband works away. So I'm home a lot in this big, huge, empty house. And it was built in 1858.
Of course it was.
Yeah. Of course, it's terribly haunted. I have all these haunted antiques. You know, so I'm just asking trouble.
But yeah, Rhonda.
Inviting it in. But so I was, you know, I have my TV across the wall hanging on the wall. I'm laying in the bed watching TV, playing on my phone. And my bedroom door opens and my cat jumps up and looks. And I'm like, oh, she sees me too. So then, you know, the knob turns, the door opens about 8 inches. And then it opened for about 30 seconds. And then it closes. And the door twists into place. This has happened. The first time this happened was 2018, and it's happened about 10 times since. So the first time I'm like, what the, you know, and I'm looking, I'm up with my gun, searching the house, ready to shoot somebody. And then there's nobody there, which I knew there wasn't going to be. And then the second time it happened, I'm like, oh God, it's happening again. And you know, by the fourth time, I'm like, please stop. I'm trying to watch TV. So it got to the point where it's like, this is annoying rather than scary. But I think my mindset changed when about 10 years ago, I started reading really frequently. I would read every now and then for just friends or family. But I really, really set my mind to, I really want to connect, started doing seances. I really want to start reading really, you know, it's probably been about 15 years ago. I was always afraid before, scared as a child. And even as an adult, it just, I'd rather not see it or hear it. But then if it's not going away, I might as well embrace it. So once I started connecting with me in charge, then when they come through uninvited, it was easier for me to say, okay, you got to go. You're not scaring me. I know what's going on now. So it was a mindset. It was a click. I don't know what caused it other than I had just embraced it, I guess, is what it was, and decided I was going to use it. If I had it, I might as well use it.
So you've actually, it's only been in the last 15 years you've really been reading.
About 15 years, publicly. Now, I've read for family and friends since I was like 19. But right. That was sporadic. And so, yeah, about the past 15 years, I've been reading as much as possible. Anybody calls? Sure, I'll read you.
So did you ever figure out what it was opening the door?
No.
No.
I guess it's just the lady that built the house that lived there before.
Maybe she was just checking on you.
Good thing.
You know, like how a mother will peek their head in to make sure.
They've been saying, your TV's up too loud. I'm tired. Shut the TV off and go to bed.
Lights out.
Was it the same time at night every time?
No, it's different times. No.
Okay, so it could have been sentient.
That's what I thought at first. I thought, well, that is weird for this to be like a residual type thing because this is the first time it's happened. Yeah. And then it happens at different hours and different times, and the cat always notices it. I'm like, okay, this is not residual.
Is it always when your husband's out of town?
That particular instance is, but he has seen me in the house, like get up, go to the bathroom when I am actually in the bed. So he sees me. It's my doppelganger, me. I don't know what that's about, but that's only been recently. That's been within the past 6 or 7 years.
Oh, but still not recent enough that it's something to be worried about.
Oh, no.
You know,
no. It seems like things are evolving and changing. Things that happen are different.
Well, I mean, that could be you evolving and changing.
It could be me opening up more. And he was always a skeptic for years. He was very supportive, but still like, this shit ain't real. But then we purchased the house that I'm in right now, the Nickerson's Neat House. This is not the house that I live in, by no means.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. This house was built in 1835. We were actually going to move into this house, but the more I was up here working and renovating, the less I wanted to live here.
In the Nickerson's Neat House?
Yes. So we ended up doing ghost tours and historical haunted tours and a annual haunted house where you transform the entire house into like a haunted attraction.
Ooh,
and so nice. We had a lot of stuff going on during that time. We had guests coming up telling us these things. I'm like, oh, that's not part of the haunt. So when we were setting up for the haunt, he is seeing these weird things and hearing these weird things. And he's like, what is this? I'm like, I told you, I don't know. This is just something. So he's become more open also. So I think it's the combo of him opening up and me becoming more evolved and more open. That it's just kind of, I'm sorry for him, but it's kind of filtered over, I think.
I'm sure there's a little part of me that's like, I told you so.
I love that part. It's like, I told you, I know what that is. So you already knew now. So you saw it too. I've been telling you. Yes, that did feel good.
Yeah.
So as a medium, I'm assuming you communicate with spirits. Why do you think this person who's opening your bedroom door won't communicate with you to tell you what's going on or who they are.
Okay, I have this rule that I live by. Don't shit where you eat.
Ah.
There you go.
I do not want to know what is in my house. I don't try to communicate with it other than saying, leave me alone. Okay. Up here at the Sneed House, we do our seances here. We use the Ouija board up here, spirit boards. We do paranormal investigations here. That's all fine and dandy because I don't have to sleep here. When I'm scared, I can go home. But I'm there by myself a lot, and I have always had this rule. Don't ever investigate your own house.
That's a really good rule, and we've heard that from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And for those of you listening, Haunted Loves, probably good piece of advice.
Says the woman who made me live stream a seance from my basement.
Oh, my God.
I knew you were going to be moving out soon.
Okay.
It's true.
Wait, was this moving out before or after the seance you decided to move out?
She moved out like a month later. I don't
the
know
The seance
why.
Really clinched it, yeah.
I told her something was in her basement, and yep, we were right.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Nickerson Speed House, because I am so fascinated by this place. You said it was built in 1835.
The brick portion that everyone sees was built in 1835. There is an inner portion of the house that's built in the mid-1700s. It is a two-room log cabin that the house is built around. The cabin was built, it was part of a Revolutionary War fort. And it was built by Francis Kincannon. There's nothing else left of that fort other than that two-room log cabin inside this house.
So your house sits where the fort used to be?
Well, not her house, but the house that she was.
Sneed, S-N-E-E-D?
S-N-E-A-D, Sneed. And then the Mason family, when they had it, they added on to it as well. And when Dr. Sneed was here, it was used as a field hospital during the Civil War, and the basement was a makeshift morgue during the winter months. And you couldn't bury bodies, but...
I'm going to say this again. Of course it was.
Of course it was.
You know it.
Yeah. So this place has got to be so haunted.
It really is. There are so many. We've had people see Civil War soldiers here. We've heard cannons. I've heard furniture tip over and feel like it's coming through the floor above my head, only to find nothing's out of place upstairs. The Mason family had two children that died here, a little boy and a little girl, Douglas and Josephine. And then, of course, Betsy Sneed, she's the lady in blue. She's been seen here. Dr. Sneed, he makes his presence known a lot. Usually when I run out the door, it's because of him. It's like, please. Oh.
Now, how often do you do paranormal investigations there?
Well, we rent the house out and let teams come in and do it. We do those. I probably have 15 teams a year come in and do those. Private investigations on their own. And then we have ghost hunt weekends with the Wraith Chasers, Tennessee Wraith Chasers. They come in twice a year on the weekend. They take 2 weekends a year and come in. But then SRS, we try to do it, which is really bad because it's our home haunt, but we don't get to do it much because we're usually doing publics at other places in the Tri-Cities area. But we try to do one a year here.
Did you say Tri-City area?
Uh-huh.
That's where I grew up. I'm from Kingsport.
Okay, so we do Kingsport, Johnson City, Jonesboro. So I'm like 30-ish minutes from Kingsport, north of Kingsport.
Okay, tell me what's haunted. I mean, I know everything in Kingsport's haunted, but tell me what you investigate in Kingsport, because I got to know. I got to know if some of the things I saw growing up were true. I'm assuming the Netherland Inn and things like that.
Well, we haven't done a public at the Netherland, but we did go out and do a walkthrough where I read the place. It's in the Tri-Cities area, not just Kingsport, Blountville also,
right.
But we've done the Deary Inn. We do publics there. Uh-huh. The Chester Inn, Tipton Haynes.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. They're all historic sites that we are the only team that can come in and do publics or investigate it all. They don't let other people.
So tell us about SRS Paranormal, since we've sort of tiptoed into that. How did it form? How long has it been around? How many people are involved?
It has grown. It is so unique to be with a group of people that genuinely get along, and we just keep growing. It seems like we find the perfect people to fit this puzzle. It started with Matt Sorge. I put out a thing on Facebook years ago when I was first opening a house to do stuff. And Matt was one of the people that saw it, and he contacted me and said, hey, can we do an investigation there? And I said, sure. So they come on. Really got along with him, and there was two others with him that's no longer with the group now. when they come up to look at the house and talk to me the first time during the day and get some history, they actually got a photo of someone in the front room when there was no one in there. We were all outside. And they actually got an EVP of a woman saying, come here. So he went back, because they were recording my historical tour. Mm-hmm. He went back to listen to refresh his memory, and he got that. He's like, oh my God, I got something on here. So then I was with a group of psychics, and we'd done a lot of events here. And we invited them to come because they were skeptical. So they have all their gadgets. And I know they don't like, let me say, their tech. They have their tech. I still don't use their tech equipment. But we would do experiments where we would use our psychic side. They would validate with their tech. And they started saying, okay, this is really happening. I can validate this with our tech. I did a reading for Matt, and I think is what kind of really pushed him over the edge. He said, have you ever got anything from me? And I said, this was after about 4 years, 3 or 4 years. And I said, I don't peep in other people's windows. He said, wait a minute, I'm not going to read to you unless you want me to. I walked that out. And so I did reading for him, and it was spot on. He said, wow, I don't know how you could have known this. But anyway, so we went, we just kept building and building, and we started doing other locations where I would go in and read the property. They would do validations with their tech. And so it just kind of grew. And Matt said, well, it seems like a natural evolution. We did Hinsdale House and Wildwood Sanatorium, those two. My daughter and myself. She's also a psychic. But my youngest daughter, went with us also. And after we investigated those two places, they said, hey, we talked about it this weekend, and we would really like for you to come on as our lead psychic medium. I think this would greatly enhance our investigations. And I said, you know, I'd love to. This, I don't even have to think about it yet. So the psychic group eventually broke up. I was with SRS full time. So then we just, it kind of grew from there. We are actually trying to put together a series. We've been talking with some producers, so hopefully something pans out. Can't say much about what we're doing, right. You know how that is, but I'm excited about that prospect.
That's exciting. With the Nickerson Snead House, I was on the website. Do you allow people to stay the night there? Like, not as an investigation, but just to experience it?
Yes. Actually, I'm glad you said that because I had totally forgotten. I mean, I forgot about it and it slipped my mind. But yeah, we are in the process of converting to a haunted B&B, which we will be renting rooms out. When we do that, I will be putting that out on Facebook with a link to on Airbnb for the rooms.
Rhonda, you have a PhD. Mm-hmm. What is that in?
That's actually in education.
Oh!
I was going to be a teacher. And I got my teaching license. I substituted for like a hot minute. And I like, told my husband, I said, I can't do this. And my professor said, you need to get your master's at teach college level. So I went ahead and got my master's and was planning on teaching at a community college. And my husband went to med school overseas. And it's a little island on the Cook Islands. It's Rarotonga. We lived there for a while and I couldn't teach there. So I found an online through Capella University where I could do most of my stuff online and do my doctorate. When we came back home, we ended up actually starting a travel nurse company because that's what my husband was doing at the time. So it prevented me from teaching. And then by the point to where I got where I could teach, I was like, you know, I really don't want to even teach college. And I said, I think I want to write. So I started writing books and self-publishing, and I created a company. And then these people kept finding me. So we're up to like, I think 25 authors now that I publish.
That's amazing. Awesome. And tell us the name of your publishing company.
Full Moon Publishing, LLC.
Wow. So is there anything you don't do?
I like to stay busy. I can't.
She told you what she doesn't do. She doesn't like paranormal investigating her own house. That's what
she doesn't like teaching. We got that too. Okay.
Well, she's a medium mentor, so that's teaching.
Well, actually, I'm a Reiki master, so I do teach Reiki classes. But
oh,
I just don't want to teach regular stuff.
Just not at a college. Yeah. For attunement, not for credit.
Exactly.
That's perfect. As a medium, what was the energy like on Rarotonga? That's got to be very different from Appalachia.
It was kind of primal, actually. It was different. Uh-huh. I tried not to connect. That was, And it wasn't hard to do when I was a young mother because I had one child was six, almost seven when my youngest was born. So I was always kind of busy and I didn't really do a lot then. So that was during that period where I wasn't really connecting with anything much unless it just kind of slapped me in the face. But there was really not a lot. I didn't connect with a lot of like what we have around here. It was more primal. That's the only way I can explain it. It was just not like a haunted house like you would see around here. It was in like, there was a forest in our backyard at one of the places. And that just freaked me out. I was like, I don't think I want to go back in there.
This is more elemental.
Elemental
type of energy.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good way to put it. Elemental, yeah.
I want to get back to when you felt like you were 14, 15 and you started taking charge of the communication between you mm-hmm. and the spirit world. Do you have any tips for either people who are being haunted or who think they might be burgeoning mediums, how to take that charge on their own?
You have to be secure. Don't be afraid. If you're going to approach it, you can't approach it with fear. You have to be confident in yourself. And confident in knowing that nothing can hurt you unless you let it in and let it hurt you. You can put up your boundaries. You know, you got to shield yourself and protect yourself. I would say before you try any of that, any kind of connection at all, is to learn how to meditate and put yourself in a safe space. Don't just go out there and say, I'm going to be a psychic medium and start doing seances because then you're inviting trouble. Yeah, be secure in your ability and confident in your ability and make sure that you set boundaries for whatever you're trying to communicate with. And whenever I do a seance or any kind of like a location reading, I always say, I have this safe space. You can't come into my space. You can't hurt me. You can't attach to me and nothing negative is allowed to be around me. That's what I do. And I just envision this big bubble that nothing can penetrate. So that's what I would say. Just be confident and sure of yourself before you start and make sure that you can protect yourself with your shielding.
And when you say shielding, you mean visualizing that mm-hmm. bubble and setting those boundaries. Do you do anything physically to shield yourself? A lot of people have told us to wear an obsidian necklace or something like that.
I have. So I'm a contradiction, obviously. So I wear moonstone pretty much all the time. But if I'm reading a house or a location that I think is going to be problematic, I will take my moonstone so I can communicate, but I also wear this snowflake obsidian ring that will protect. And I do say anything black, tourmaline, obsidian, onyx, even something black will protect and shield.
Rhonda, this has been an amazing interview. It is so cool to talk to you. I love connecting with people from my neck of the woods. There's just such a rich culture in Southwest Virginia, Northeast Tennessee, Western North Carolina, that whole area. It's just so rich with these stories, and you are so connected to all of it. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure, and I would love to come back in the future when I've got something else going on. I really want to stay connected with you two ladies. You've got such great energy and it seems like we need to be connected.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll definitely be in touch when we're in town next. As you mentioned, people can stream Season of the Witch on Amazon, Tubi, Roku, Walmart.com, and some other places. Mm-hmm. And then you also have the Nickerson Sneed House, which is going to be a bed and breakfast very soon. And that's at thenickersonsneedhouse.com. And it's THENICKERSONSNEAD house, HOUSE.com. We'll have that link on our show notes. So
they can also find me on Facebook. If they just type in the Sneed House, they can find it there.
And they can also find SRS Paranormal on Facebook as well. Okay, excellent. And what's the URL for your publishing company?
So you can include that. They can also find that on Facebook, but it's womanpublishingllc.com.
Excellent. We will have all of those links on our show notes at homespunhaints.com. Please, those of you listening, make sure you check out everything that Rhonda is up to. It is so cool. You also give Reiki classes. I mean, like I said, I don't think there's anything you don't do. So hopefully people can connect with you and learn more about you and get in touch if they're in need of any of your services.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the show today, Rhonda. Listeners, Haunted Loves, what do you think? If after all these stories, would you ever spend the night in the haunted Nickerson Sneed house? Sounds like you might be able to soon, and I think that'll definitely give you a spooky day.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielimnik and Diana Doty and produced by Homespun Haints Media LLC. Editing and music by Becky Kielimnik. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.